we knew we had a good team coming into this year, and we thought we'd get off to a good start, but I don't think anybody envisioned 19-2. But, you know, it's just everything's clicked, and I think the biggest thing is that, you know, this team was already good, and the continuity of the organization over the last couple of years, the track record of the putting together the roster, the personnel, and then, you know, these guys have played together now for a few years. So it's all clicked pretty quickly, and it's exciting to see.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
Today is Friday, December 12th, 2014, and you are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram, and with me as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
And joining us for the first time, former NBA player, blogger, author of Can I Keep My Jersey, and host of the Short Corner podcast, Paul Shirley. What's going on, Paul?
Just working through a little cold, guys. Trying to sex up my voice for you all.
Mission accomplished, man. Remarkably sexy.
I am slightly turned on here.
Which makes it really awkward for me sitting next to Scotty.
Glad to have that effect from afar.
There you go. And I got a habit of kissing the ass of the guests who I'm really fired up to have on. Let me just get that out of the way right now. Loved your book, love your blog, current fan of the podcast. We really appreciate you coming on, man. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for the ass kissing. I will not argue with that.
Fair enough. Why don't we jump into your background real quick? Let's start with your NBA career. We did a little research. Scott's far better at it than I am, so correct me if I'm wrong. I got you playing for the Hawks 02-03, the Bulls in 04, and the Suns in 05. Is that right?
That is exactly correct.
Am I missing anyone?
That's the extent of it. And that actually makes it sound more impressive than it really was, because I think I appeared in something like 35 games total or something, just abysmal number. It's funny when people want to introduce me or talk about me, it's obviously the first thing that comes is ex-NBA player. And I start to believe it myself, even though truthfully, I was very much the journeyman. You know, I went to training camp with probably five different NBA teams, didn't make those teams. Finally got called up by the Atlanta Hawks, first of all, and then each subsequent stint was a little bit longer, but none of them were very impressive. So I always feel like a little bit of a charlatan just even calling myself that. But there is truth to it. I did play in the NBA, and I spend a lot of time in that world. I played for, I think, 17 different professional basketball teams in 9 or 10 years. So I had a pretty Forrest Gumpian run in all.
Great word. And, you know, collectively, I'm not sure Scott and I have even attended 35 games, let alone played in them, man. So, you know, your experience is perfect as far as we're concerned. And kind of building from that, much like any person in sports talk radio, I'm a wannabe athlete. I never got past like the collegiate intramural level. Anything you can tell us about your experience in the NBA, I'm sure we'll soak up. Let me start with an easy one. How the hell do you guys spend your days when NBA players aren't actually playing in games? What are you doing? How do you pass the time?
That's a good question. One I ask myself, because I think to myself, like, well, how did I not take some online classes, or like, what was I doing with my life? I think for me, it was strange and probably not typical, because I was so under prepared for that world, just because I was never a particularly gifted athlete compared to a lot of the guys I was playing against. I spent a lot of my time just resting, which sounds silly, but like as I look back at those times, I think, like, what was I doing with my time? And a lot of that time was just spent listening to music in a hotel room or in my apartment or wherever I was.
It wasn't filled with groupies and parties.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Not doing cool things like going out or having sex with three women at the same time. Because I was just so tired all the time. And I think it's kind of like, when you hate to extend the metaphor to war, because it's kind of simple and pedestrian, but it is a little bit like being in the military or something. At least for me, it was, because when you have a chance to rest, you take advantage of that. And so I spent a lot of time just doing very little, which is kind of depressing. The good news for me was that I spent some of that time reading and writing, and so I had kind of an idea or an inkling of what I wanted to do after basketball. But yeah, it's a boring answer. I wish that the answer was I was busy dating all of the girls from Melrose Place or something, but that was just not the case.
You know, we'll ask you again later on. Feel free to lie. You know, you could say you had a full stable of women, whatever it is. You're a drug dealer. You know, we'll just run with it. Why are you so tired during the year? Is it during all the travel and stuff? What is it that gets you so down?
Well, it's the actual act of playing basketball. She's so tired. And for me, some of that too, it's hard to differentiate sometimes my NBA career from my career in Europe, where a lot of times we were practicing twice a day. And whether we were practicing twice a day or not, these are huge human beings who are trying to smash you all the time. And it just wears you out, not only physically, but also for me mentally. We don't want to get too far into psychology of it, but I spent a lot of time thinking about, like, how am I going to get myself mentally ready to try to compete with these guys who I know are better than I am. So I think that's different, obviously, than probably what Kevin Durant is going through. He doesn't have to worry about some of those things because he's a little bit better. But I do think that the people do have a little bit of a misconception of what being an athlete or a professional athlete is like, because they see the month in August where guys are off and maybe they're in Las Vegas partying. And so they interpolate that and think that that's how the season goes too. But the truth is that it's a lot more dull than people realize. And I think that's probably what made me want to start writing about it, was just to shed light on the fact that it wasn't as glamorous as people wanted it to be, which unfortunately doesn't make for a good copy sometimes.
Let me ask you a sensationalized question. Let's see if it makes good copy or not. Scotty touched on it. It's actually something I'm degenerately interested in. How the hell does the whole groupie thing work, man? I mean, I imagine players come into a lobby full of women who are just ready to get it from you. Is that true? Is that groupie thing even actually going on? What's your experience?
Not even close to that. First of all, people forget, like, NBA players are not that recognizable or famous. Especially with the sorts of people that you would assume would be groupies, which is probably like, what, 18 to 25-year-old girls. Like, they're much more interested in college athletes at whatever school they're close to. Maybe football players, because they're probably more famous. But if you took, like, if you went to a random bar in Dallas, Texas, and showed a picture of LaMarcus Aldridge to some random 24-year-old, there's no chance she would know who he is.
But what if you had LaMarcus? I mean, in human form, NBA players are so recognizable because they're just massive individuals. And oftentimes I find that a lot of NBA players always are wearing gear too. It's like, I'll see these Warriors guys out and they have like a Warriors sweatshirt on.
And if I ever see them, I always try to sleep with them to just from my own standpoint. So.
Yeah, we basketball players didn't or do not do a very good job of hiding that fact. And a lot of that is just laziness, because I find myself still doing that. Whatever is on top of your dresser is what you put on. So I think a lot of that's unconscious. Like, guys aren't trying to be recognizable, but they can't help it. So yeah, you're right that basketball players are recognizable. But if you think about the logistics of things, if we're really going to break this down scientifically, most of the time, you travel to a new city and arrive like at 3 a.m, and all you're thinking about is getting to bed. Nobody in the world cares to go stake out the hotel in Orlando, Florida, and see if like the NBA players are coming by. The next day you play the Orlando Magic, right? And then you leave on a chartered plane to go to Atlanta to play the Hawks. So there isn't the old mentality of, well, we had a great game in Atlanta and now we're going to, have some dinner and then go out as a team, which is honestly what I thought it would be like. I thought that it would be like the 27 Yankees, and we would just be this huge unit of camaraderie, and we'd go have steak dinners, and then we'd be chased down by flappers or whomever else, and that would make my childhood dreams come true of being bathed in women. Now, how it does work is that The truth is that guys do meet girls because they are in these cities year after year after year. So they actually build up more stable of like cell phone contacts. And I also cannot speak to what things like social media have done to that world, because I played sort of before the advent of Twitter and Tinder and all of those things. So I could imagine that that makes it a lot easier too, because now it's like working with a sniper rifle instead of a hand grenade.
So basically you would have certain contacts in certain cities and you'd go back and revisit those contacts when you travel around. What was it like coming to,
I mean, theoretically, yeah, they're not real interested in the 12th man on NBA team like that. That's how it works for, a guy several slots ahead of me, but no one's really given a damn about whether Paul Shirley's going to town.
What was it like when you guys would travel to Oakland? Is that a destination that people were fired up to come visit, or is that not a city that rated very high for you and the other players?
It's one of those that rated high for me, because I love San Francisco. I was actually born in Redwood City, so it has always kind of seemed close to my heart. But NBA players are not particularly cultured most of the time, so they're more interested in, is it warm outside? That's all they really seem to care
well,
about.
We got that advantage in California. Let me take us a different, slight direction. I remember a story from your book, first training camp, you play against Kobe. He ends up, I think, tossing your shot, talking big shit to you. Take me through that, man. Give us a sense of that experience. What the hell was that story?
Mostly that story is grounded in being afraid all the time when I was in my first training camp with the Lakers. It was the Lakers of Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant. They had won, I think, back-to-back championships already, and we're trying to, the first meeting with the team was, we need to decide on a phrase, or instead of saying we're trying to three-peat, we need to come up with something else to say, which I thought was far different from what I expected out of a training camp. Kobe Bryant was actually not, I think he was done the first 3 days of that camp, so I kind of had a false impression of what an NBA practice was like, because when he got there, things ratcheted up rather significantly. It just, his presence changed everything. There have been these stories coming out the last couple of days, actually, about him practicing now anew, and he and Nick Young getting into it. It all rang very true to me, because even though that guy is a gigantic gaping ass wound, he, as a human being, he's a supremely competitive person who was sort of just put on the planet to be a very good and competitive basketball player. That's obviously falling off. He's shooting whatever 38% from the floor, and I think he's got sort of a joke, kind of become a parody of himself. But he does change the way a practice. The practice used to run to taking up some very terrible left-handed layup, and he went up and blocked it, and on the follow-through kind of crashed into me, and we both went to the floor, and I ended up on my back, and then looked up to find him standing over me saying some combination of the words, bitch, and never, and bring that here, I probably should have punched him, because I was going to cut anyway, so...
Yeah, there you go. I mean, we hear one of the advantages that Kerr had when he first came here is that he punched Jordan when he was playing for the Bulls, right? It's become like this big folklore story. So had you done it, maybe you'd have a career as an NBA coach, man.
Yeah, you never know. I might have played for 10 years, and I'd be a worse person for it. So probably best that I didn't.
Who's the biggest asshole you played with?
I mean, it seems like the obvious answer because it's close on my brain, but Kobe Bryant, pretty hard to top. And I mean, it's easy to trash him, especially now. He was, though, or he still is, one of the smartest people I ever played around. It seems like his smarts got channeled completely into this competitive fire, and into making himself psychologically invincible. But in a different world, he probably could have been a physicist or something.
Wow, is that smart? Huh? I'm impressed. In your experience, the better the player, the bigger the assholeness, or does that not necessarily true?
Usually, it's a pretty good correlation. Justin and I on the podcast have talked about it. It's more that the guys who are really good are almost sociopaths. They don't really. It's not that they probably mean to be as difficult as they are. It's just that the same traits that allow them to, after missing six shots, to take the potential game-winning shot on the road are the same traits that mean that they just don't understand how human beings feel.
Sure.
So I think that a lot of those guys, and not a lot of them, most of them, are just really out of touch with human behavior. They just don't have any real concept for how real people feel and think. And I think that that actually sort of slides over into their treatment of women and that sort of thing. They just don't really know. Nobody's ever been able to get through to them to impress upon them that this is just not how you behave. Unfortunately, we're getting really good at covering that over,
right?
Because we're able to sort of market these people for our own good and forget that, like, these probably shouldn't, as Charles Barkley, of course, famously said, these shouldn't be role models in a lot of cases.
Right, and that's really interesting. It sounds like you're saying the skills that lets them be cold-blooded at the end of the game forces them to be cold-blooded in social life, right? I mean, they just don't have that connection.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% saying that. Yeah, it's very true.
You mentioned Redwood City. Are you a Warrior fan? I mean, I know you were born out here, but didn't necessarily grow up in the Bay, right?
I did not. Yeah, my parents left for our pastures and had to get back to Kansas for reasons that I still don't really understand. I've always had sort of a soft spot for the Warriors, though. They seem like they're just one of those teams that's fun. They seem difficult to dislike. Yeah, I don't have any real ill will toward them. They also like to score, like almost over their entire history. They've been one of those teams that likes to get the ball up and down the court. And I like when teams have an identity like that. Justin and I have also talked on the podcast about how I think teams make a mistake when they don't decide on some kind of identity. And the Warriors have had one going back a long, long way, which is kind of nice to have that as a sort of a given in the NBA.
Right now, the Warriors are on a 14-game win streak, best in franchise history. What is it like when your team is on a win streak like this? Are guys getting superstitious and not changing routines? Is the atmosphere really happy, or are people worried about the streak ending?
Because you played for that Suns team with the best record in the NBA, right? So, yeah, you've had a little experience with this.
Yeah. I think it sounds kind of trite, but the teams that roll off those streaks have gotten really good at focusing in on the day-to-day and creating an environment where people are probably pretty happy all the time. And then that lends itself to success. And a lot of times, I think guys in sports understand that these streaks are going to kind of come and go. But the bigger test is, like, are we doing the right thing night after night? And I think that Suns team that I played for / watched, the team had built such a culture of doing things the right way. Just we know that we're pretty good. And as long as we do things the way we're supposed to do, we'll probably win. And I would guess that that's kind of what the Warriors' mindset is right now. I don't know that there's much of a feeling of invincibility. And a lot of guys aren't paying that much attention. That's another dirty secret, to the sorts of things you and I are paying attention to.
Like what?
Well, they're much more worried about very specific goals. Like, tonight I need to go out there and DeAndre Jordan has kicked my ass the last two nights we've played against him. I'm much more worried about that than I am the fact that we've won 13 or 14 in a row.
And will they actually say that like in the locker room? They'll tell you, well, hey, this guy beat my ass, I got to make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah. I mean, that's like the NBA has become very individualized, which again was disappointing for me when I got there. But it's the job, I think, of the coach to be able to harness that and then turn it into a positive direction. Like Sean Marion, when I played for the Suns, I'm not sure that Sean Marion knows how many games are in the NBA season, which I'd say only half in jest. He's more worried about, like, last game, I only had 5 rebounds. My average is 9, and I'm making $14 million a year because I average 9 rebounds. So I better go out there and get 14 rebounds tonight. And that's disappointing to somebody who grew up on gravel roads, like shooting baskets, thinking that everything was going to be like Hoosiers. But it's also the truth. That's not to say everyone's like that, but a lot of NBA players are much more worried about the microcosm of their own existence as opposed to the teams.
I mean, that makes sense. Hey, let me broaden it. And let me start this way. I've been a Warrior fan forever. This entire situation with them being, you know, 19-2 is surreal to me. I don't know how to deal with it. And because of it, I can't be objective. And you're in a perfect place. You know, you know hoop. You're kind of a Warrior fan, but you're probably in a better place to be far more objective. How good is this team? Do you view them as a title team? Are we just getting lucky early? What do you think?
I did some mild research about the Warriors this week. And one thing that I don't think people talk about enough in the NBA is strength of schedule. I was thinking about the Warriors' run, and I was like, well, have I seen them beat a lot of really good teams? And the answer in my mind was no, but obviously I haven't seen all of their games. So I did a little more fact-checking, and I think they've had the 20th most difficult schedule so far. That doesn't mean they've had the 30th most difficult, so they haven't had, like, the easiest schedule ever. But they have had a pretty good run of it, and I wonder how much – I'm not going to make the case that that means that there's a fall – that's imminent, but I would say that it's interesting to think about how much that has done for the team, mostly having to do with, do they now believe in Steve Kerr much more than they would have otherwise because they've gotten off to such a good start? So I think it bodes well because I think it's important to believe in your coach, but that coaching respect oftentimes comes because of happenstance or luck. We were talking on the podcast this week actually about the fact that Doc Rivers is not a great basketball coach. He was pretty mediocre until he got three Hall of Famers on his team in Boston. Now he's looked at as kind of a fairly esteemed basketball mind, as kind of this like old crafty coach. But there was a different way for that to go. If he didn't luck into having three really great players on his team, he'd probably be like Maurice Cheeks. We'd just be like, I don't know, he's an okay coach, but not great. So I think Steve Kerr might benefit a little bit from that too. Just the good start might then lead to better things down the road.
I mean, you overlapped with Kerr for just a second in the league, and I know then he also joined.
Did
the
I?
He retired in 2003 with the Spurs. And I know, with you on the Hawks in 2002 to 2003, how come I know your career better?
You can tell we stalked you too, Paul. It's a little embarrassing. You know, it is what it is.
But then,
I'm pleased by the background work, guys.
Kerr also became a consultant for the Suns in 2004. Have you had much interaction with Kerr over the years?
He was around the Suns. I knew him a little bit, but not a few. Say anything about whether I thought he would be a good coach or not. I'm usually pretty suspicious of ex-players as coaches, so I would have guessed that he would not have been great, but he seems so far to have a pretty good handle on things.
I'm going to go back because you gave us a sense, but you didn't give us a direct answer. So they've benefited from an easy schedule. And I agree with you, incidentally. Even the hard teams they've played, they've caught on injury breaks or the back end of a back-to-back. But how many wins do you think for the Warriors at the end of the season?
How many wins for the Warriors? Let's see. I would predict that they will finish probably second or third in the West, and that will mean that they have had 58, 59 wins.
That's a pretty good team.
Yeah. No, it's a really good team. I do think that they will. My sense is that they will come back to earth a little bit, but I think they'll be in pretty good shape by the end of things.
And to follow up on what you're saying about the coaching, the record's shown that you're not a big Mark Jackson guy. In fact, here you go. This is a description of one of the podcasts you did. Quote, Mark Jackson, or let's see, discussing weather, quote, Mark Jackson was merely a normal-sized bag of crap versus the gigantic one we believed him to be. And you also had a tweet where you dropped this list: 1, Porky Pig; 2, Timmy from South Park; 3, Helen Keller. Quote, a short list of people who would be better at Mark Jackson's job. Taking that into account, now that Kerr is here, the huge jump in talent for the War and the wins that we're seeing, is that because of Steve Kerr?
I don't know. I think I would guess, by the way, that my my tweet about his job was more having to do with announcing, but I don't know. I mean, I think he's a terrible coach also, but I think he's a really dreadful announcer. I don't know. It's what I'm learning is that I'm often wrong about coaches. Like, I thought Jason Kidd was borderline an idiot, but he seems to have figured something out in Milwaukee. I thought Brian Shaw was not very good as a coach, but he seems to be doing okay now in Denver.
Let's not get too far from that Jay Kidd comment. Why did you think he was an idiot?
Just because he seemed lost, and he also seems like an egomaniac who can't necessarily back up his egomania with smarts. Like, there are egomaniacs like Kobe Bryant who can back it up by being really good at what they do. Jason Kidd, as far as when it came to his coaching, seemed like he wanted to give people the impression that he had it all figured out without actually figuring anything out. And I think that's a dangerous combination. It's like, that's why powerful people can be awful if they haven't earned that position. Mark Jackson, though, just doesn't seem, I mean, I hate to say it, but he just doesn't seem smart enough to me to be a really great coach. I think great coaches are very, very smart, are able to balance a lot of stimuli. Like, we forget how difficult it is to deal with all of the balls in the air, proverbially, at the end of the game, when you're thinking about, like, well, this guy's hurt, and now I've got to play this person on defense, and now I need to draw the play. Like, that takes a lot of brain cells, and my impression of Mark Jackson is he doesn't have a ton of those to spare.
So you think an NBA head coach actually matters? Like, a good coach can make a difference? Because I think a lot of people criticize NBA coaches as not being much of a difference maker because the players are so talented on their own.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit that I'm biased because I believe in coaching. Like, I think it's important to have everybody headed the right direction. We've discussed this too on the podcast, the fact that our personal biases do tend to get in the way, right? Like, I want to believe that coaches are important, and so therefore I talk a lot about the importance of coaches. I don't know that a lot of the coaches in the NBA make a ton of difference, but I do think that certain ones do. I think what we've kind of decided that it's like a false positive, false negative kind of situation, where you can hide a bad coach with really good players, and you can hide a good coach with really bad players. But if you have good players and a good coach, it often kind of shows. Like, the Chicago Bulls, I think, are a demonstrator of, like, Tom Thibodeau is a good coach because he's gotten the most out of players who are good to mediocre. I don't know that you could say for sure that Terry Stotts is a great coach in Portland. He has a lot of really great basketball players, and they may be hiding a bad coach. Some of that is subjective, though. Some of that's just my own take on things. It's hard to really come up with objective reasons for why guys are good coaches. I tend to go back to my belief, which was that when I was playing basketball, a good coach is someone who, when he walks into the locker room, everyone stops what they're doing and pays attention to him.
Yeah.
Which is simplistic, but very important. It could also describe a good, like, platoon leader. I think there are certain people who are good at leading just because of their cult of personality, and there are certain people who are not.
Yeah, just leader of men. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. That's probably true for any profession, you know? Let me give you another generalized Warrior question. Is Steph an MVP? And here's why I ask. You played with Nash when he won the MVP. The biggest comparison Steph always gets is to Nash. So I guess two questions. One, do you view him as an MVP candidate? And two, do you think that comparison makes any sense?
I don't think that comparison makes much sense because Nash was such a distributor. I guess maybe there's the undersized part of it that kind of makes some sense. I don't know. I guess my issue with that would be that I tend to think of the Warriors as a really good basketball team that was built correctly, and that they are very much greater than the sum of its parts or their parts. So I don't think that they're a team that is too reliant on one player. So that's actually a kind of a compliment. I like teams that are built that way. Not that my approval matters so much, but I don't think of him as a guy that people are out in the world discussing. And that may not be the right way to think about an MVP, but I do think that there has to be some kind of cultural impact too. Like, are people talking about this basketball player? And I know people are, in a sense, but I'm not sure they're talking about him at the same level they're talking about LeBron James or Mark Gasol or Anthony Davis or maybe Kevin Durant if he plays the whole year. I don't think he's quite at that level of household memory.
You're probably right. I'm a little bitter hearing it. You know, before I was a big fan of yours. Now I'm starting to flip to the other side, but it is what it is.
I'm a polarizing figure, guys. That's just how it is.
Well, hopefully this next answer will push me right back onto your team, Paul. Let's see. When you were blogging for the Suns, you mentioned an all-ugly team, a subject really close to my heart. Tyrone Hill has always been my starter at power forward, for example. When you were talking about it, you said there are two members from Minnesota, one from the Bucks, one from the Warriors, one from Portland. Who's the guy from the Warriors?
Oh, my goodness. That's so long ago. I'm not dodging the question. I just cannot recall.
Do you have an all-ugly team now? Anybody come to mind?
I feel like that. I like to speak my mind and really hold no bars or whatever. That's not exactly how that phrase goes.
I don't like to hold any bars either, man. I'm with you.
For making fun of people because they're ugly was pretty childish. Let's be honest.
Well, then you're perfect for this podcast, man. I mean, that's exactly what we do. So you're on the money.
Oh, I've made you mad again. I think the first thing we would have to examine is like, why do I care about whether a guy's ugly or good looking or not? I think that it says a lot about me and how shallow I am. But like watching Anthony Davis's unibrow flash across the screen drives me insane. But is that really his problem or is that more my problem? I think it's probably more my problem. Is it that I'm worried about how I look? Is it that I'm insecure about my own looks?
What you can't see is that I'm covering up my unibrow right now.
And unibrow makes me sad, and I don't know why. I don't know what it is.
I know we're running short on time. This will be my last question, I promise. It was something I really wanted to cover with you. In addition to the NBA, you've got a whole lot of time overseas. And I've got all these preconceptions of playing over in Europe or wherever the hell it is. The first thing I've heard is when people are playing overseas, when you're at like the free throw line, the fans can be brutal. You know, they can fire hot quarters at you or throw random. Is that true? I mean, what was your experience over there?
It's pretty Wild West at times. I can remember vividly warming up for a game in Spain, and it was an away game. I don't remember where we were. I was just out there kind of minding my own business. Happened to catch the eye of a fan probably 18 rows up and saw him whisper something into the ear of his like 8-year-old daughter. And the next thing I knew, the 8-year-old daughter was sprinting down the stairs with her eyes on me. And when she got to the bottom, she stuck out both of her middle fingers and her tongue at me. And I was like, why would you do that, sir? That's not good for your daughter's development. But yeah, there are myriad stories of, you know, I was in Greece playing a game against Olympiakos, and I think we had the balls to lose to them by like 4 instead of 40 like they wanted us to. So as I was coming off the court, I saw the silver streak out of the corner of my eye. And it was this 1.5 liter bottle full of water just aimed right at my head.
Jesus.
Same league, the fans would occasionally bring Roman candles into the game and shoot them across the court at one another. In that league, actually, when my team lost in the playoffs, and I came home and remember reading that the finals between Olympiakos and Panathinaikos went to game 5 or game 7 or whatever the deciding game was, and the commission of sport, because the Olympiakos fans had turned over the bus of the Panathinaikos fans or vice versa the night before, made the teams play in an empty stadium in order to punish the fans for being so crazy.
Jesus Christ. So do you get used to that, man? I mean, it just is what it is? You're getting a paycheck, so you deal with it?
Oh, it kind of, I think it adds to the pageantry a little bit. I wish NBA fans would care that much. They don't care unless there's the kiss cams on them, I don't think. So I actually... I mean, I suppose it could cross the line into being dangerous, but again, we're not really talking about like life-threatening stuff here.
Sure.
I don't know, Roman candles?
Well, they weren't shooting them at us. They're shooting them at each other, so who cares?
And also, the next game, what you don't know, is I'm rushing the floor and giving the double bird to whoever the hell the best player is. So I'll bring that passion for you, Paul.
I like it. I mean, if you do think about it, and I've made this reference somewhere else recently, but I will make it again. We have kind of gotten away, I think, in the U.S., at least with the NBA, from some of that passion. Like, their NBA games are pretty sterile and antiseptic because there are so many games. Each game's not that important. It's not like an NFL game. It's not like a college game. I think that makes it fun for a fan to feel that much a part of the game they're watching.
You know, we flash forward now 24 hours, and there's some headline in the SF Chronicle: asshole Fran brings Roman candle to game and gets arrested. And I'm going to blame you for that, Paul. Whenever it is I get arrested, it's your call.
Okay, I'm okay with that. As long as it breeds more fun and more headlines, great.
Done. Hey, Paul, thank you so much, man. Phenomenal appearance. We really appreciate your time and your opinions, and really can't tell you how fun this was.
No, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. It was fun to talk about some of those things I haven't talked about in a long time.
Where can we find you, man? I know you got the podcast going for people out there who love the appearance as much as I did. Where can they tune in?
It's Short Corner is the podcast. I do it with Justin Halpern, who's the creator of My Dad Says, and a guy named Phil Hay, who wrote the movie Crazy Beautiful, and RIPD, weirdly enough. It's a pretty rollicking podcast. And then on Twitter, I'm just at Paul Van Shirley.
Perfect. And at the risk of showing you really how much I was stalking, your last podcast talked about the Warriors specifically, right? So for those who are interested in Paul's takes even further, go check out the Short Corner. It's good stuff. Thanks again, Paul. Hopefully we can do this again.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Please remember, you guys, if you're looking for us, our email address remains warriorshuddle@gmail.com. Our Twitter account is @warriorshuddle. We're on a number of podcasting services, including iTunes, where please, please, please get on there. If you like the show even a little bit, write us a review or just give us 5 stars. It would mean so much to us. And finally, our website remains warriorsworld.net, where if you want to check out the video, it's up there because of the services of our amazing video guys, both Sumit and Jeff. Huge fun this week. Thanks for listening, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Start it. Started from the bottom, now they're here. Started from the bottom, now their whole team's here. Warriors made it to the top. Started from the bottom, now their whole team's here. They done kissed the real from the jump. Working for the playoffs and they got a slam dunk. They literally took it to the roof. Now they are unbeatable when they play at home. Dub Nation is where it's at. Haters till they fall.
Good, good.